Our words are powerful. The Bible says that the things we say have the power of life and death. Join us for a 5-week series from the book of Proverbs called Watch Your Mouth as we unpack the power of helpful words, honest words, hopeful words, hurtful words, and healing words. And now here's today's message.
Right. Hey, everybody. Good morning. How you doing? You warm? Mildly warm? A little bit warm? All right. It's warmer here. I want to congratulate you, and you congratulate yourselves and each other. You all have perfect attendance for church in 2018. So you are one for one. And listen, this is probably the coldest of the 51 other Sundays, right? This will be the coldest one. So if you did it today, you can do it again for the next 51 weeks. We'd love to see you here. We really do work hard to make sure that there's something every week that God has given us. And I'm glad that you're here to take part in that today, because as Anthony said, we've got a new year. We've got a new series. It's kind of a big day in Western New York, too, if you can feel that. There's a really good energy in the lobby today. I hope that there's still kind of energy around 4 o'clock. But this will be perfect if things don't go well. Watch your mouth, all right? Like, this is great. We've been saving this series for the Bills to get back to the playoffs so that we can tell you guys, watch your mouth. But we're going to talk about the importance of words. This is such an important topic. This is a huge topic. Our words matter so much. What we say, who we talk to, how we say them. We find out quickly that our words are powerful. Our words are influential. And words, because of that, have this crazy way of not disappearing. Words stay around for a long time. You learned as a kid, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. And you probably learned 5 minutes after that's trash, right? That's not true at all. Like, you're like, oh, actually, those words did hurt a lot. Some of our biggest wounds in this room would probably be from words that were said to us or words that were said about us. And because of that, I don't think I need to go too far into detail. We could all come up this morning and we could line up and we could say with unbelievable clarity some of the most hurtful and destructive things that have been said to us. So we all know all too well how hurtful and how destructive words can be towards us. But then somehow we have this tendency to forget when we're allowing our words to tear other people down. But our words have incredible staying power. And that's true for the good things that we say, and that's true for the bad things that we say. Both of them have incredible staying power. I'm going to tell you a story about two things that were said to me at my first church on the same Sunday, because I became a conference ministerial candidate, which is like a Free Methodist term for I became a pastor. Like, I could be appointed as a pastor. And I'd worked for this church since I was a teenager. And so now I felt like Pinocchio, kind of like I was a real boy, you know. I was like, all right, I'm in. And so it was a big thing, and I was really excited by it, and just kind of felt validated at that young age about ministry and all that stuff. And so I remember I was sitting over there. The ceremony was here at Northgate. Became a conference ministerial candidate. That Sunday, I walked into the church, and there was a man standing there who was an ordained elder. He'd been like around the church for a long time. He worked for the college, and I can still picture where he was leaning on this desk, and he kind of got a grin on his face, and he said, "Good morning, Pastor." And I don't know why. I'm fine now. You can call me John. It's fine. It's been a while. Like, that's cool. But at that moment, that meant so much to me. Just the way he said it, who said it, and all that, and I was just like, oh, man, those words, they gave me life. And I remember the exact same morning, later that morning, because as I've told you a couple different times, if you haven't been here, I kind of was on like an accelerated character development plan for a while, and based on like God's will for my life and my own stupidity. Those things really combined to cause a lot of trouble. And so I had done some things that I'm not proud of and wasn't proud of then. But that morning, I ran into a woman who was pretty familiar with some of those things, and she said, "I can't believe they let you be a pastor here." Right. Don't laugh. This is like my, geez. This side of the room. These guys are nicer over here. They thought that was hilarious. That was like crushing to me. Like, one, I thought it was a legitimate thing, which is why it really hurt, right? The things that people say that are pretty legitimate are the worst ones. But it was just like, as high as I had been earlier that morning, I was even lower now. It just like crushed me to be like, oh man, she's probably right. What are they thinking? Because our words are powerful. And look at what Proverbs 18:21 says. This is a suggested memory verse, not just for today, for the whole series. It tells us the tongue has the power of life and death. and those who love it will eat its fruit. That day, those words had the power of life, and they had the power of death, depending on who said them and how they said them. I experienced that in such stark contrast. And so because of that, because of the power that we know words have, we're going to spend the next 5 weeks unpacking different types of words, and we're going to start today with helpful words. We're going to move on over the next few weeks to honest words and hopeful words, hurting words, and healing words. But throughout this series, I hope that you will see what our main point is today. Wise people recognize the power that words have. Because of that, what they do, they use them carefully. Wise people recognize that words are extremely powerful. It's not just something you throw around. It's not something that you use carelessly. They're powerful, and they use them carefully. And we're going to base a lot of this series out of the book of Proverbs. The book of Proverbs is this book of wisdom. It has this overarching theme that tells us the importance of getting wisdom and the importance of seeking understanding. And that ties into our words so much because we need to be people who are wise with our words. And we need to be people who understand the power and the impact that our words have. And the first way that we're going to do that is by talking about helpful words this morning. Words can be helpful. Sometimes they cannot be helpful. On Thursday morning, Amy is a nurse at Strong, and she has like a pretty long, like close to a mile walk from the parking lot to the building. So Thursday morning, she's going into work at like 6 o'clock in the morning, and she's all bundled up. She's got like long johns and stuff because scrubs are not really that warm, and like a ski coat and a mask. And I was like, it's not really even that cold this morning. She's like, yeah, it is. I said, it's 18 with the wind chill. It's 8. She's like, that's cold. I said, if you think today's cold, you're going to die tomorrow, because she was going in on Friday when it was like 25 below. And she said, that's not helpful. It's like, you're actually right. So on Friday, I told her to treat herself. She parked in the parking garage. She paid the $6 to park in the parking garage for that day. But we want to make sure that our words are helpful. And I want to give you a couple different things that we all can do to make sure of that. And here's the first one. Make sure that you share the good things that you're thinking. If you want your words to be helpful, share the good things that you're thinking. Proverbs 3:27, Pastor Vern used this last week, but I want to take it to a step farther with words. 3:27, here's what it says. It tells us, do not withhold good from those to whom it is due when it is in your power to act. Now, he talked about actions with that last week, and I think that's the meaning of the verse, but I want to take it a step farther to words. I want to tell you to not withhold good words from people when it is due, when you have the power to be a blessing with your words, to be an encouragement with your words. Do not withhold that from them. It's important to understand that watching your mouth is not just about not saying things that you shouldn't. Watching your mouth is also about saying things that you should. If you just walk out of here and say, I'm not going to say anything anymore, you miss the point. You're not being helpful with your words, because I don't want you to withhold good from people by not telling them what you need to tell them. One of the big ways, not only guys, but guys, I'm primarily looking at you, is if you can't say I love you out loud, you're withholding good from the people that it's due, from the people in your life. You can't say that to your parents or your spouse or your kids. If they say I love you and you say like, yup, not good. You say you too, or you say later, like, they know how I feel. Those are all weak answers. If you love somebody, tell them that you love them. If you don't, you're withholding good that is due to them. You can withhold the good that is due to somebody when you can't compliment them, when you can't tell them, like, hey, you did a great job, or you look nice today, I like that shirt, whatever it is. When you compliment someone, it's not actually putting you down. I don't know if you know that. You can raise somebody else up and not be putting yourself down. And sometimes we're hesitant to do that because we think that it changes our own status, but what we end up doing is withholding good that is due of someone. Another way that we do that is if we can't ever talk about emotionally important subjects. If all your conversations are an inch deep, I would suggest you're withholding the good that is due someone. You need to have some emotional conversations, some things about things that are a little more deep than just playoff football or the weather or things like that. If we're going to be people who focus on helpful words, a lot of that is by saying the good things that we're thinking. So don't withhold good from someone that deserves it. Here's the second one. This is probably a little easier to guess. Don't share all the bad things that you're thinking. If you want to make sure your words are helpful, don't share all the bad things that you're thinking. If you're filling in blanks, a lot of you would have got that. You saw it coming. But you know I've got to go in this direction too. I need to, because if we were getting a report card on this subject, a lot of us would have a little needs improvement in this area of like, okay, this is something we need to do better. And Proverbs is full of verses that encourage us to be wise about this, like 13:3, where it tells us, those who guard their lips preserve their lives, but those who speak rashly will come to ruin. It says, don't just shoot off at the mouth about everything that comes to mind. Don't speak rashly or you'll ruin yourself. You'll ruin others. People that say everything that they're thinking, especially right as they're thinking it, they tend to ruin themselves. They tend to ruin relationships. And some of you are thinking, well, I tend to do that, but I'm usually right or I'm always right. Hold on. It doesn't even matter if you're right. It doesn't matter. I don't care if you're the smartest person in the room. Proverbs says you become a fool when you begin to blurt out everything that crosses your mind. Look at 12:23, where it tells us the prudent keep their knowledge to themselves, but a fool's heart blurts out folly. Some of you, if we want to use words in a helpful way, a thing that we need to do is slow down. We need to filter through the stuff a little bit that we're going to say. We need to give some thought to the words that we're going to use and the way that we're going to use them. We had a Bible Trek teacher a little while ago teach a lesson, and she had a tube of toothpaste, and she was saying, like, your words are kind of like the toothpaste here. You can make the choice to squeeze that out, right? And the toothpaste comes out, there's words, maybe you say something hurtful, it's, you know, that's stupid, I don't like you, I don't even care what you think. And you can make the choice to squeeze the toothpaste out. But once it's out, it's not going back in. And that's how it is with our words. You make the choice to let them out. But once they're out, you cannot take them back. I can say something hurtful to you. I could tell you this morning, like, that's the ugliest shirt I've ever seen. And I could be like, you know what? I'm sorry. I'm preaching about words. I shouldn't have told you that that was an ugly shirt. I promise you, the next time you look in your closet and see that shirt, you will remember that. You will still remember that that shirt is the one I said that about, even if I'm really sorry. Because once the words are out, once they've been spoken rashly, you don't get them back. So please do not share all the bad things that you're thinking. That's not helpful to anyone. Most of all, it's probably not helpful to you. And if we want to get better at this, if we want to improve at not sharing all the bad things that we're thinking, we must improve at this next thing. How can we make sure our words are helpful? Listen more than you speak. This is going to be a key for a lot of us. And this is called irony when you're speaking for 30 minutes straight without stopping and telling people to listen more than they speak. I get it. But Proverbs 29:20, it says, do you see someone who speaks in haste? There's more hope for a fool than for them. So again, we need to slow down. We need to listen first. Speaking quickly leads us to foolishness. There's this very clear theme throughout Proverbs of that, where we see throughout life, we see it all the time, rush decisions are usually bad decisions. When you have to make a rush decision, you tend not to make that good of a choice. We're really hoping to see that manifest itself for about 3 hours with Blake Bortles. When you rush him, he makes bad decisions. Similarly, if your car died today and you're like, okay, I got to get a car. I need to go to work on Monday morning. I've got to go to a dealer this afternoon. I'm going to buy a car. That's not a great plan, right? You need to take your time, shop around, look at that, because rush decisions tend to be bad decisions. Well, rushed words also have a tendency to be the wrong words. They have a tendency to be very unhelpful words in the moment. If you stub your toe, which is surprisingly like the worst, but you stub your toe, if you got bad words in there, that's probably a time they're going to come out, because in the moment when you first do that, that hurts, doesn't it? Like, you feel like, man, that really, it's got that throbbing pain and it's painful and it's like, oh man, it makes you mad. But you know what happens if you wait a minute, 5 minutes, 10 minutes? It goes away, right? Unless you broke it, then you should seek medical attention. But if you just stubbed it, it goes away and you're like, man, that really hurt in the moment. But it stops. Very similarly, or when people use words with us, when people say things to us that are really hurtful, we have that rush where we want to have rushed words, we want to rush them out, and we might say things that we probably shouldn't say, and we're going to get into that in a minute. But if we can wait a day, if we can wait, you know, maybe sometimes just an hour before we respond, we find that we make better choices with our words. Proverbs 17:27-28 encourages us to do this. It says, the one who has knowledge uses words with restraint. It's a novel concept these days, using words with restraint. And whoever has understanding is even-tempered. Even fools are thought wise if they keep silent, and discerning if they hold their tongues. This Friday's thought of the day from the New York Times, which Pastor Marcia sent me, because I don't regularly read the New York Times, but it said, wisdom is divided into two parts, A, having a great deal to say, and B, not saying it. That's why it's having a great deal to say and not saying it, because if you've ever met someone that you quickly realized was really smart, and then shortly after that you realize that they were smart to the point they would not be a great person to be around on a regular basis, then you know what that verse is talking about. But if instead, if we go the other direction, if we seek understanding, rather than just seeking to get our own point out there quicker and louder than anyone else, we can really cut down on the amount of foolish and unnecessary things that we say. And why is that? I'm glad you asked, because 18 verse 2 says, "Fools find no pleasure in understanding, but delight in airing their own opinions." Now, they don't need my advice, but I'm going to give this to them for free. That verse should be the mission statement for Facebook. Like, that's Facebook right there, where it's like, Facebook, fools find no pleasure in understanding, but delight in airing their own opinions. That's the whole point of that thing. It's the same point of Twitter. If you made a goal of 2018 to seek to find more pleasure in understanding where other people were coming from than in airing your own opinions, I think you would be shocked at the impact it had on your life and on your relationships. And then speaking of Facebook, we got to go to the fourth one here. It's not only Facebook, but a lot of it falls there. How can we make sure that our words are helpful? Avoid unnecessary arguments. All right, we don't normally do it. Can you say that with me? Avoid unnecessary arguments. This will be good. I used to be super argumentative. Like, that's still my wiring, but I would be willing to argue anything, especially on Facebook. I got to delete so many things in my time hop every year when it comes around. I'm like, don't need that anymore. Don't need that anymore. I would argue about politics, sports, movies, any kind of opinion. I'd argue whether or not raisins would ruin oatmeal cookies, which obviously it does. Raisins ruin everything. But that's my natural wiring. But you know what I found out? I found something out from doing that. It was about 3 or 4 years on Facebook before I realized this. It is exhausting, completely exhausting, to carry the burden of always having to be right and always having to convince everyone else that you're right. It's totally exhausting. Some of you know this. You wouldn't admit it out loud. But not only was I always right, I had to make sure everyone else knew that I was right. Even though them being wrong doesn't really change the opinion. You might like raisins and oatmeal cookies. That's fine. You're wrong. But you can have that opinion. I've lost the need to convince you of that. Here's what Proverbs says about starting a quarrel. It says, starting a quarrel is like breaching a dam. So drop the matter before a dispute breaks out. So if you want to start a fight, you're just opening yourself up to whatever rushes out through there. You post something on Facebook. You say something in a text message conversation. You email someone, and then you've got to check back, right? You got to keep, like, checking back and looking. Or you get in an argument with someone, and you're, like, formulating the rest of the day. You're formulating your response to what you think their response is going to be. And you spend your whole day consumed with this hypothetical conversation. And if it's online, if it's on Facebook, you got to keep checking back to see if anybody responded to your thing so that you can then respond again. Maybe you could even link an article you haven't read, and so then they'll really know that you're the authority on this subject. And that's why Proverbs says it's like breaching a dam. It says you have no idea the mess that you're getting into, so just avoid it. Just stay out of it. Don't start quarrels. I remember having an argument with a guy. We just had one mutual friend on Facebook, and the argument, this was like, I don't know, 6, 7 years ago, was about if baseball was dying because of the attendance numbers. And I didn't, like, curse him out or anything. We just had this discussion, you know, I can debate a little bit. And he said he was going to come to my house because of a discussion about baseball attendance. And I thought, well, clearly I'm arguing with somebody that's not mentally stable. But that's why you don't start quarrels, because you have no idea what you're getting into. You don't know what you are opening up. So don't start arguments. But this goes beyond that. Even beyond that, don't jump into somebody else's argument. You know what Proverbs 26:17 says about people that jump into someone else's argument? It's like one who grabs a stray dog by the ears is someone who rushes into a quarrel that's not their own. Unless you're foolish enough to just walk up to stray dogs and just grab them by the ears, then you probably shouldn't also jump into somebody else's argument. You know, we were just going to get, Amy and I were getting all our shots and our vaccines and everything for Africa, and the rabies stuff is $1,000 a person, and she said, just don't touch the animals over there and you'll be fine. And I was thinking about this. I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to go to Africa and grab stray dog by the ears, and I'm just about as likely to jump in on somebody else's Facebook fight. It's not a good plan. I don't have time for that stuff. I had somebody a little bit ago after a football game. A friend posted something, and I was like, well, I'll just, like, clarify what the rule is here. I didn't want to be involved. And I was like, well, here's what this says, and tried to be as peaceful as I could. within like 2 minutes, somebody jumped all over me. It was clearly argumentative. And I just did, you know, the gif where like Homer Simpson backs into the bushes? I like just deleted that comment and was like, never mind. I don't want to be on Facebook anymore. You get to a point where you don't have time for that. But some of us really struggle to just walk away in a conversation. We can't just walk away when we feel offended. We can't leave a conversation. We can't sit there quietly. We can't keep scrolling. But I have a verse that I think could really, really help you. A verse that might change your perspective on this in Proverbs 19:11. This is a verse, man, I wish I could get everyone to memorize this one too. A person's wisdom yields patience. It is to one's glory to overlook an offense. Did you know that? It is to your glory to overlook an offense. We live in a time where everyone is constantly offended. Everyone is offended about something. We live in this like outrage culture where I'm so mad about everything that people did to offend me. I saw an article a little bit ago about Holy Cross, which is a college in Massachusetts. And I'm not arguing about whether or not Crusaders is a good nickname, but their mascot has always been the Holy Cross Crusaders. And there's this push now. They got to change it because the Crusades weren't like a really nice thing. I don't know if you follow your history. But the thing that got me in that article is somebody said, if even one person is offended, we must change this name. I thought, wow, good luck, man, because at least one person is offended by everything. Like, at least one person is offended. And that's a place that you just can't change. You can't, like, locate you. It's a target you can't hit. So I have a super novel concept for you based on this verse. Get ready. If you write things down, get ready to write this down. You can overlook an offense. You can. You might not believe me. You might have to build it up like a muscle where you do it a little bit and you do it a little bit more. You can overlook an offense. You can be offended by something and decide that you're not going to respond to it, that you're just going to move on with your life and pretend like it didn't happen, and you'll be okay. I have this rule. I boycott all Christian boycotts. If I hear, oh, Christians are boycotting Disney, I'm like, pack the family up. We're going to Disney, right? It's like, oh, Christians are boycotting the Shack. It has bad theology. I'm like, come on, we're going and we're getting popcorn too. I don't love that. I don't love that Christians have become such whiny crybabies because the rest of the world doesn't believe what we believe. We can overlook an offense and we'll be okay. Maybe if we learned how to watch our mouths better, the world would be more prone to believe what we believe. But instead of that, instead of us thinking that they'll know we're Christians by our love, we think that they'll know we're Christians because we're outraged over the color of Starbucks cups. It's fine, man. There's a shorter line at Starbucks when the Christians are boycotting it. I'm still going because I've learned that I can overlook an offense. And Proverbs 20, verse 3, it tells us this. It's to your glory to overlook an offense. It's to one's honor to avoid strife. But on the other end, every fool is quick to quarrel. It's to your glory to overlook an offense. It's to your honor to avoid strife. Remember those truths. Use them. Apply them. Just because you're offended does not mean you have to jump into an argument. Just because somebody hurts your feelings does not mean you have to respond. In fact, it is to your glory and it is to your honor not to. So what do we do instead? Proverbs 15, verse 1. A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. Take some time. Slow down. Remember that quick words are usually foolish words. And when you must give an answer, answer gently. It only takes one gentle answer. It takes one measured response to diffuse a potential argument. So what do we need to do? We need to share the good things that we're thinking. We need to not share all the bad things that we're thinking. We need to listen more than we speak, and we need to avoid unnecessary arguments. And now part of me thinks I can just say, like, okay, good, go out and do that, right? If you don't have anything to work on from that, you are far ahead of the crowd, and you're preaching at 11, so congratulations on that. But this is one of those messages where I feel like it's super easy to hear and agree with and say, yeah, that's true, I got to work on that, and it's much more difficult to apply in our lives. I'm going to tell you why that is. It's because our mouth is really just a thermometer. Our mouth is a thermometer. Now, Bill, I'm going to wade into some HVAC stuff. You see how I did over here. A thermostat changes the temperature. This is the extent of my knowledge. A thermostat actually changes the temperature, correct? A thermometer just reads what is there. A thermometer will only tell you what the temperature is where you're measuring. Jesus talks about this in Matthew 12. Look what he says in 12:34-37. He's talking to the Pharisees. He's pretty upset at them, as you'll see. He said, you brood of vipers, how can you who are evil say anything good? For the mouth speaks what the heart is full of. A good man brings good things out of the good stored up in him, and an evil man brings evil things out of the evil stored up in him. But I tell you that everyone will have to give an account on the day of judgment for every empty word that they've spoken. For by your words you will be acquitted, and by your words you will be condemned. So Jesus says our mouth is just the thermometer, and it's our heart that is the thermostat. Your mouth just reads what is there. It's your heart that actually affects that. So when evil things come out of my mouth, you know why that is? Because there's evil things stored up in my heart. Do you ever say something you wouldn't normally say and you think, man, where did that come from? Maybe you haven't done that. When I do that, I kind of have to work backwards and see like, wow, what was going on in my heart that brought that out? Well, I want you to know this morning very clearly that Jesus Christ, who said those words in Matthew, he has the power and he has the ability to change our hearts. Because there have been times where I've buckled in. Like, I think of myself as pretty self-disciplined. I've said, I'm going to buckle in, and I'm going to try hard, and I'm going to do better at this. And I found it to be an unending struggle. I just found it to be a losing battle. But there have also been times where my heart was surrendered to Jesus. And I found things that did not used to come naturally suddenly start to come easier and easier. I found things where I thought, man, 6 months ago, 1 year ago, that would have really set me off. I would have said some rash and stupid and foolish things there. And for whatever reason, I didn't now. And that's because God had begun to change my heart. Because you can be upset all you want at a thermometer for reading the temperature that's there. And probably a lot of you have been doing that the last several days, right? You can look at the temperature and be like, oh, come on. But until you change the thermostat, it won't make a bit of difference. Until you set that differently, it won't make any difference. So be upset at what comes out of your mouth all you want. But until we change our hearts, until we allow Jesus Christ to penetrate our hearts, to surrender our hearts to him, and for him to change our hearts, then we see the thermometer start to read differently. So let's be wise people. People that understand that our words are not only powerful to the people that we speak them to or the people that we speak them about, but they are a powerful indicator of what is going on inside me. They're a powerful indicator of what is going on inside you. Because our words, they matter immensely. They steer our lives. They impact the lives of those around us. My words are shaping the people that matter to me the most. The things I say to my daughters are shaping how they view themselves, how they view Jesus, how they view me, how they view the world. The things I say to my wife are shaping my relationship, my marriage, my future. And your words are doing the exact same thing. Your words are doing the same thing. They have the power to bring life or death. They have the power to build up or the power to tear down. They have the power to be a blessing. They have the power to be destructive. Our words have the power to be incredibly helpful if we recognize the impact that they have and we use them carefully. So let me ask you, how will you use your words today? Let's pray.
Thanks for joining us on the Northgate Podcast. We hope this message has been a blessing to you as you walk with Jesus Christ. For more resources, visit our website at northgatefmc.com or download the Northgate app. Have a wonderful week, and we'll see you next time.